Biden and Trump, yet there are 75,000 votes which are mysteriously blank, which should be hand recounted. That recount is essentially being blocked in the communities where it's most likely to make a difference, that is, in the communities of color, particularly around Detroit.
And in Pennsylvania?
Pennsylvania is an incredible bureaucratic mess with these 9,000 precincts, each of which have to be handled differently. In Pennsylvania, we'll be in court today, actually, pressing the case forward for a statewide recount. You know, at this point, we are pushing ahead, and we're building this movement, which is not going to be stopped by political cronyism and economic extortion. We deserve a right to vote, and we deserve the right to be confident in that vote, to have automatic recounts when it's close, to get rid of these fallible voting machines.
We will have to leave it there. Dr. Jill Stein, 2016 presidential nominee of the Green Party. And that does it for our show. If you'd like to see our 20th anniversary Democracy Now! Event at Riverside Church, you can go online to see the whole thing with Danny DeVito, Danny Glover, Harry Belafonte, Noam Chomsky, Juan Gonzalez, Jeremy Scahill, and many others. Also performing as well, Patti Smith and Tom Morello. DemocracyNow.org is the place to go. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
This is KBOO, KBOO Portland, and it is 8 o'clock. Up next is Positively Revolting, right after this.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the third annual International Human Rights Day, December 10th at 6 p.m. at the SEIU building in Portland. International Human Rights Day is a day of solidarity and remembrance of people all over the world who continue to be oppressed by human rights violations. Those who are systematically marginalized, disappeared, imprisoned, and killed. This event features a report back from solidarity trips taken to the Philippines in the summer of 2016, cultural presentations, and more. Again, that's the third annual International Human Rights Day celebration, December 10th at 6 p.m. at the SEIU building, 6401 Southeast Foster Road in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is currently hiring for the following three positions: Station Manager, Evening News and Public Affairs Director, and Director of Underwriting. To apply to one of these positions, send a cover letter and resume to hiring@kboo.org, or bring or mail your resume with cover letter to 20 Southeast 8th, Portland, Oregon, 97214. Please answer the following question: why is KBOO important? Open until filled. Interviews will begin around December 9th. No phone calls, please. KBOO Community Radio is an equal opportunity and affirmative action employer. Women and people of color are encouraged to apply. For more information, go to kboo.org.
What would you have instead?
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Seattle Theater Group, presenting an evening with comedian Sarah Silverman, performing at the Keller Auditorium on February 8th. Tickets are on sale now, and more information for Sarah Silverman at the Keller Auditorium is available at portland5.com.
What would you have instead?
This is it.
This KBOO program has also been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from the Seattle Theater Group, presenting comedian Tig Notaro, performing at Revolutionary Hall Friday, December 16th. Tickets are available for her 10:30 performance, and more information can be found at revolutionhall.com.
And you are listening to Positively Revolting Talk Radio. Here we are on your community radio station, KBOO. I'm Ani.
I'm Lynn, and I just want a small public service announcement. If you think you're going to get outside and your car, well, the ice will have melted off already, unless you have a garage or something, it hasn't. Just know this. Give yourself a little extra time. The main streets are fine, but there is still much ice on people's cars. That's all I have to say. Amen.
We thought that somehow or another we would help. Because you should learn from our experience. But we did make it. And we're here. And not only are we here, but we are here with Barbara Ford, who is a wonderful return guest to Positively Revolting, a great cultural organizer, an activist, an artist, a musician,
General Renaissance woman.
General Renaissance woman.
And we love talking with you. Thank you so much again for joining us this morning.
Thank you for inviting me.
And we thought that this would be a wonderful time to invite Barbara back on. Because, well, let's look at it. So far, since Lynn and I have returned to the airwaves in our post-election world, we have talked about sort of the despair, basically. There's a lot of despair going on, but what do we need to do?
It's an onslaught.
An onslaught of despair.
Of not just despair, but of...
All that is good?
What
is being slaught against?
Well, it's kind of like what... I've almost stopped saying, okay, what will the next... Really? Okay. What will the next horrible person in the cabinet be? Well, yeah. Oh.
Who that? Okay. Who that?
Yeah, I was just saying to my partner last night, I said, so it's just like everyone is like the absolute, totally worst person you would ever consider might even be possibly nominated.
Right. Oh, let's look. If we look really? Into this bag of horror and we dig down deep. That one. That's the pick. Okay.
Way past the basket of deplorables.
So we...
Way past
we that. See this. We see this going on around us. And, so what do we do? We know that action is the antidote to despair. So we know action is required. We know anti-fascist action has taken many forms in many societies throughout history. And we want to learn from that. We also want to... carry it forward in a way that says, what's really important? How do we, as we engage in a struggle? And I think, oftentimes in the 22 years of this talk show, I've tried to avoid words like the struggle.
The struggle.
It's the dance. It's the move. It's the change. It's the this. But I think that, euphemism stripped away because Helen Caldicott says that the world would change if we quit using euphemisms. And I think she's probably right. That we can say this is going to be kind of a struggle. This is feeling a little ominous and a little weird. So how do we keep from taking in that energy and becoming that which we fight against? And as we ponder this, as we meditate on this, we keep coming back to the importance of spirit and the importance of integrating spirit into our daily work as cultural organizers, as activists, as people who want to change the world to make it a better, just, beautiful place. And when we talk about connecting to spirit and remaining connected to spirit, we think of you, Barbara.
Oh.
Because you do so much work in that area. You have worked with Joanna Macy in her work of the work that reconnects and the importance of reconnecting. And you have so much of your own work that looks at the integration of spirit and creativity and art in changing the world.
Yeah.
And I think that's a good place to start. Let's start with the importance of it. Why? A lot of folks on the left a lot of us embrace spirit, but there's still that leftover, the Marxist phrase of, religion is the opiate of the masses and the sort of hogwashery that people have been subjected to for generations of you get pie in the sky when you die. And so, you toil here and that's just fine. That's your worldly lot.
Yeah. Not what spirituality is.
And so they sort of turn away from anything to do with spirit.
Yeah.
How do we talk to folks that say, spirit, why? There's serious work to be done. Come on, women, what are you talking about?
Yeah, and if anybody's like on social media, you'll see it fought out in comment sections continuously. So, mm-hmm. It's been something that I've sort of been witnessing. I mean, I have my own stuff about that, but of course, just because I think about this stuff a lot and I might talk about it once in a while, like it this morning, doesn't mean that I don't have the despair and the fear and the everything. And I'll just want to mention that as someone with their eyes fairly open to all the possibilities of before the election, but still waking up the morning after the election, the waves of grief and anger and fear came through me. And this one poem came to me. This is a piece. This is what you're talking about. And it's a quote from Dina Metzger. And it was made into a song by Charlie Murphy and Jamie Sieber, which I failed to bring for you.
Awesome. Yeah.
And the quote goes like this. There are those who want to set fire to the world. We are in danger. There is only time to work slowly. There is no time not to love. And that has been my mantra.
Yeah.
Since this time. Because there's this sense of urgency that we're all feeling, right? Mm-hmm. That's just like, oh, we gotta, and yes, we gotta, but it's the we part that we're forgetting. It's the fact that it can't be I that stops all the cabinet appointments. And
right.
that takes all, you know. And
darn it, Barbara, I was...
And
I
that, you know,
fine.
We'll stand in front of water cannons and freezing, you know, freezing temperatures in North Dakota. You know, it's like it's the we part that we forget.
Mm-hmm.
That we, one of the things about spirit or whatever language you want to use, I'm sort of comes from the deep ecological viewpoint, is that if we really understand ourselves to be part of a larger whole, then we are indeed a part of a larger whole. So we can hold up our little piece of the sky, you know, because we know that there are other beings out there who are holding up their little piece. And it frees us a little bit to not physically, emotionally, spiritually have to feel responsible for every single thing that's coming, because we can't be. I mean, we are there to grieve, we are there to act in whatever we were called to, and action can take many forms. Action
and sometimes you don't know what it is. I remember that wonderful thing that happened with the Greenpeace folks coming down the on the bridge and the Kai activist, and then I think it was Nick Caleb that on Facebook was like, I feel like such a failure, blah blah blah. Well, 3 weeks later they decided to stop doing Arctic drilling. And in life in general, you don't always know. I mean, you got to focus on what your action is, but don't let your ego make you think you're going to know what the outcome is necessarily going to be.
And that's what I see a lot on the whole comment section of Facebook is like, I know you're wrong because blah, blah, blah. And it's like, do you really know what's right and wrong here in this moment? You know, because I am try sometimes valiantly to let myself not know and to sort of have a humility about what I think should happen, because I don't know, really. I mean, I have my opinions, definitely. There's a book that was written many years ago, about 20 years ago, by this guy named Paul Loeb, and the title of the book was called The Impossible Will Take a Little While.
Yes. I remember that.
And he tells stories. It's a story-based book about how these interventions that look like they're worthless change things. So one example was... there's a story about these women who were standing in the rain in Washington, D.C., three of them in the rain with their kids for an hour on a lunch break on the mall protesting nuclear weapons. And, you know, people are passing them by and it just seems like a futile, sad thing that they're just standing there doing this thing. And the story is that there's this person who notices them and sees the fact that they're out there with their kids in the rain with these signs, pathetic, and realizes they must be there for a good reason, and started researching. And it turned out that it was Benjamin Spock, the pediatrician, who then became one of the most vaunted activists around nuclear weapons. And it was that small moment of him seeing these women. We didn't know that. They didn't know. They never knew. They never knew what effect that they had, but they spurred on somebody who then became a larger voice for this, for that movement. So that's sort of a, that's like a magic moment that we're thinking of, a thing where like we don't know what our actions are, but we also understand that we are part of a larger whole and that we can spark things. And the reality is we don't know what's going to happen, but the main question I hold in my head is, who shall we be in the meantime?
Right.
Who shall we be in the meantime? Will we be somebody who gets into fights about, you know, being perfect?
Yes.
About our actions or about other people's actions or what we should do? Or are we going to be somebody who sees we're all in this together? Who are we with? What is my job? What might be other opportunities for doing this work? Because not everybody is built to go stand on the front lines. And that isn't, those are just, that's just the tip of the iceberg of a movement.
Yeah.
That is just, that's the only, that you see that part. That's the most visible part. But there's a whole lot that has to happen and a whole bunch of people that have to do work in order to make that happen.
And being grounded in, and by spirituality, to me, that just sort of means knowing who you are.
Yeah. Yeah,
and your connection with mm-hmm. With the earth, with people,
mm-hmm.
To know who to know that and to keep centered in that is one of the most important pieces of work we all are going to have mm-hmm. for these next however many.
I don't even want to know. And I don't even want to speculate.
I mean, it's good work, you know, in general. But yeah, very important at this moment. You know, when you're talking about who are we going to be, how are we going to act, and you know, in work, in movement work, what I've seen over my life is that there are the groups that tend to form by shunning. Mm-hmm. That person's politics don't quite align with mine, therefore they are
counter-revolutionary,
anathema. We denounce them. We, you know, whatever it is.
I hate that.
And we've seen this, and I've been in those groups, and I've left those groups, or been ousted from those groups. I don't know, something like that. We wouldn't have each other. And then, you know, but I think that that kind of organizing, I'm just going to go ahead and put it out there, is at this moment, perhaps not going to serve our highest and best interests. If that feels like it does to you, then rock on with your bad self. All right, mm-hmm. cool. Because really, I think that what is going to behoove us is not putting up a whole lot of barriers right now.
Right. Well,
we need the largest whole, right?
Exactly.
We need to realize that we are all in this together, even if that person eats meat and that person doesn't really care about organic. They just don't know. They, you know, it's not a part of their reality. And that person over there likes to drive the big car. You know, at this moment in our lives, let's, I would say, get over our particular momentary lifestyles and connect and really feel those deep connections.
Yeah, and I would say we need those edges. We need those edge people. But we don't need those edge people to shame people into not being good enough. I want those edge people. I need those edge people to remind me of where I can grow, but without that experience of, you know, I'm bad. Because honestly, we need to do everything. We need everybody, as Naomi Klein has said. And
it's pretty much where I'm going with that.
Yeah, yeah. And so there's a piece of that that's just, I think it comes a lot from a desire. It comes out of our fear. You know, the compassionate part of me is like, people each latch on to something that just gives them meaning and truth, and where they feel real, where it's true. It's very, very true for people that this is the right way to go.
Mm-hmm.
Yay. Not a problem. Not a problem to feel like you have found your way. Like, awesome.
Yeah.
Stay with that and allow for the fact that other people may have different ways and different journeys. And invite them into your world, perhaps, you know.
Right.
But But this is not a time for us to be shutting each other down. And it does come out of fear, and it comes out of a sense of, you know, we're lost, we're scared, we're angry, and it feels like things are closing in. And what I want to say about this fear is, you know, there's a lot of talk right now. There's more and more talk within movements and between movements about this idea of colonization. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm talking about colonization both in terms of how our culture has been colonized, our peoples have been, the land has been colonized, but our hearts have been colonized also. So let's stay with this moment of like, let's not let them colonize our hearts. Let's not own that part. Let's change that story of colonization. And I'm working on that in myself, in my own body. When things go bad in the world, I have had the experience of being assaulted and, you know, physical assault and abuse. That part of my body starts getting, that's where I'm colonized in my body.
Yeah.
So I have to find a way to take care of myself and not yell at my body, be mad at my body for not doing everything I want it to do or not being able to like be as sturdy as I want to be, but to, you know, sort of offer my compassion to that part of me that has been colonized as well. And I'm not comparing colonizations.
Right, I'm not saying,
you know, that I'm not denying, you know, it's not.
No, it's super important
all
to be
lives,
clear
I'm not
that.
Talking about all lives matter here. I'm just saying that for personally, for us to take care of ourselves and to be with each other, we need to understand that this is part of the story as well.
Absolutely. There's actually on Twitter this morning, I found immediately after after posting about our show, the next tweet I see talked about the importance of staying grounded and grounding the energy that we have running through our bodies in order to continue, basically. And, you know, otherwise it's not sustainable.
Right.
And we have to do something to really run, you know, as we feel, we take in energy all the time. We have to ground it out. We have to let it go and allow that energy to fuel us and not overtake us. 'Cause the energies around us are fairly oppressive right now. We can really take some conscious effort, and I think it's important to do so, to remember to take in beauty every day, and to remember to take in love every day. Mm-hmm. You know, self-love, love of others, love of our community, love of our furry friends, however that looks in your world, you know.
Right.
But to remember to take in love and to give love. And that and grounding can help to sustain this movement through what I'm seeing is going to be some fairly challenging times.
Right.
It's like, music is very helpful at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
But also really listening. Get your Pee Wee Herman ears out. You know,
I want to know what you mean by that.
The giant ears.
Yeah.
To try to really listen to what people are saying, because sometimes that's hate speech. You're doing it. Wait, no. Perhaps you mean someone feels misunderstood,
mm-hmm.
especially from the folks who have been listening to some sort of right wing. It's not even right wing anymore. Neo-fascist tweets or things people have been saying that are, as we call them, the fake news now. But it's really important to listen really carefully. And if you can, mirror things back to people, because sometimes they can understand that if you say, "But didn't you maybe mean?"
Yeah.
You realize that if you carry your thought down the road, it goes here.
Yeah.
That
well,
kind of stuff?
Not even if I wouldn't even put a you in there. I'm just going to say, perhaps you meant, could this mean blah, blah, blah? And then the thing that I've been using a lot that I stole from Starhawk's book, which is there's a place for you at our table, which does not mean you get to control the table.
Right. Yeah.
Little details.
But. Because it seems like the only, we don't have, I mean, I look back at the Spanish-American, not Spanish-American, the revolution in Spain in the 30s. Mm-hmm. They didn't have a chance because they were trying, it was the, their hearts were there, but they were outgunned. Mm-hmm. And what we have that, shall we say, do I want to say the opposition, the insanity on the other side doesn't seem to have a connection to heart and spirit. That's the secret weapon. I mean, I saw that in watching what the First Nation people are doing in Standing Rock and other places, Idle No More, the whole thing. They're so grounded. They're grounded in who they are.
Yeah, and they are grounded in a cosmology that shifts the entire conversation. They are ground. They're not just stopping a pipeline.
No.
They are not just stopping a pipeline. They are shifting a cosmology into a place of a larger understanding of what this is about.
And so I want to, a couple of things. Want to remind folks, you're listening to KABU, your community radio station. This is Positively Revolting. I'm Ani.
I'm Lynn.
We're here with Barbara Ford this morning, and you can join in this conversation at 503-231-8187. And you can also follow along. You can like our Facebook page, where you can find us, Positively Revolting, or follow along in the Twitterverse at Positive Revolt. And to get back into the changing the cosmology, you know, to be immersed in a cosmology that has a vastly different story than, you know, this is a temporary world of sorrow and it passes away and then we're in greater glory, you know, which...
I forget that's that story.
You know, that's the story of the dominant culture, right? That's the story of the dominant culture in which we find ourselves.
High in the sky when you die.
I find it not fulfilling, personally. But there's other cosmologies that it's so important to realize that these coexist. And no one better than any other one, really. You know, when it comes right down to it, people's truths are people's truths. We are, you know, that's not a fight. I'm really... ready to engage in my God's bigger than your God. No, yeah. That's sort of ridiculous. But that connects directly to something we were saying right before we went on the air, and that is to change the world, we have to change the story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let's talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, and you know, Charles Eisenstein has been talking about this. Michael Mead has been talking about this. Other people of deep wisdom have been talking about this. And certainly people in the First Nations culture, they've been talking about this. This is not news.
No, to them.
So this is one of the things that we all need to like. None of this is new for whole swaths of folk in this world. It's just that finally there are larger swaths of people of privilege, particularly right now, who are all of a sudden like, oh, no. Oh, okay. Because, you know, I follow like Dallas Goldtooth, who's an awesome organizer for the Indigenous Environmental Network, has been reporting on this action that's been taking place. And he's like, he literally did whatever the Facebook equivalent of is. He said, none of this is new to us.
Right.
Of course. None of this is new to us. We've been doing this for 500 years. We got this. I mean, this is literally what he said. We got this because we understand how to be with this energy and how to be with a different story. Mm-hmm. And that's, I mean, I think that this moment right now and at Standing Rock and elsewhere, Black Lives Matter has a very deep spiritual component as well. Mm-hmm. I was just reading an interview with Patrice Cullors about that very thing. That this idea, this changing the story, is part of what they are there for, the largest part of what they are there for, because it looks like, you know, the black snake may indeed go through, you know, but we don't know because we don't know. And but at the same time, huge swaths of our country are like all of a sudden looking and understanding in wonder, in absolute wonder at the way that this these communities of Native folks are doing this work, and in absolute wonder, because it's like, oh my God, this is really, really, really powerful. Why is it so powerful? It is.
Yeah. Well, and one of the reasons is it's deeply connected, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Let's go ahead and talk to a caller. Good morning, Sean. You are on the air. Sean.
Hi, are you there?
Hi, yeah, we are.
Okay. So, yeah, I came in on this kind of late, and the part I came in on actually was right about when you were talking about, you know, ultimately the choices we make, we don't really know where that's going to take us, and talking yeah. to the kayakers and so forth.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's interesting because I'm reading a great book called Sapiens, and it's a fantastic book written by a historian, but it basically follows the, let's say, the life storyline of Homo sapiens over our existence. And one of the things, it's interesting because I just read this part, is, of course, is he makes the point that as a historian, the biggest thing that he's come to understand is that ultimately we never know where we're going to end up taking ourselves, because there's so many choices that we have to make and do take along the way. But ultimately, when we look back and when we look forward, we didn't really ever know where we were going, so to speak. And so you have yeah. to just trust your faith, and everything you do one way or another, of course, is going to have an ultimate outcome. But I just think that that was, a lot of times people just don't think about that. I think a lot of times people actually think that they have more control over their outcomes than they actually do.
Well, they'd like to think so, I know. It seems comforting.
It does seem comforting, and yet there is the butterfly effect, right? There's the ripple effect, and we absolutely have no idea, except I think that, you know, it behooves us to live our lives in a way that is in accordance with our highest values. Because when we do that, well, A, it kind of means that we're aligned with ourselves, right? We're not in conflict with ourselves. And it also means that we are providing an example. We don't have to judge others for doing whatever it is they're doing, but we can provide an example of how it is we believe is a good way to be. And I've had some very moving moments where people have told me impacts I've had on them when I have no idea, you know, what was going on. And that is, I mean, to me, that is our paths, right? That's how we teach each other. That's how we bring each other into the new world.
And, right. And it's yeah. really, you know, the fast, I really highly recommend this as a read to anybody, because the timing of it, I mean, really, yeah. what the you know, the subject matter is always good, but it's really interesting, the overall, what he talks about in terms of the time we find ourselves in.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the essence of his book, is that we can look back at these scenarios before, like the other day on Democracy Now, when they were over the anniversary, as Noam Chomsky was mm-hmm. talking about, if we look at where we are now in his so-called hopefulness, is if we just go back and look at where we were 60, 70 years ago, we've made tremendous leaps, and things are actually better now than they were before. But it's easy to say that, so to speak, in our own time zone, kind of thing. That's kind of the essence of the book, and what I'm getting at is that one of the really interesting concepts is that with the election of Trump, is there's kind of a two-part to this, is that a lot of people are feeling very hopeful to learn from it, and a lot of people are feeling very hopeless, that we've reached a turning point and so forth. But, you know, the reality of existence is that that's happened over and over and over. And one of the interesting things that he mentions is that, you know, as culture and as society, is that it's really interesting, something to think about, is that as culture and society, we base a lot of what we do off of so-called memes, and that we don't necessarily make choices to benefit our human selves. We're more basing choices off of the memes and the beliefs that we have as a culture and as mm-hmm. a society. And yeah. I think that's something hard to comprehend, that we don't actually comprehend or think of ourselves in the choices. And I'm not saying that we don't, and obviously you can agree or disagree. I just think it's an interesting yeah. concept, because I think there's a hell of a lot of truth to that.
Thanks very much, Sean. I get
human
it.
In our human brains, we're making choices, but they're not necessarily for our gotcha. Benefit, which is good, because we need to think of the whole.
Thinking of the whole is good. I mean, what you're saying sort of brings to mind the voice of mother culture, as Daniel Quinn talks about it. And depending on how connected and grounded that culture is, you know, that can be a great thing, and it can be a terrifying thing, depending on what the overarching culture says is the norm, right? Because, you know, as we were talking about the cosmology of people who are very connected, you know, the indigenous people across the planet, for example, that the voice of mother culture in those societies is a very different voice than we hear in, say, contemporary, current, mainstream culture, U.S., where it's more like what you're going to buy, what you're going to earn, how you're going to extract those resources, what you're going to use. And, you know, so I again, a little analysis of the culture you're in and where you're at in where that's at in relation to the culture you believe to be healthy.
Yeah, and I want to talk a little bit about activist culture too, because I think that many activist groups are starting, either they have had some concept of taking care of spirit, and they may not use that language, but taking care of self or each other or comradeship or something. But I can't say that I've seen it as a huge part of activist culture. So I want to do a little bit of a shout out to some work that my activist world is largely centered around 350 PDX, Climate Justice Organization, whose mission is to grow a diverse climate justice
and a fine movement. Group of people they are.
We do some awesome work. And so one of the things I love about 350 is they don't value one kind of activist or over another. You know, we're sort of a bridge group. We do direct action, and we also do policy work, and we also do a bunch, you know, and everything between.
And there's always art in there.
So it's been my stealth agenda for 2 years since I've been on the leadership team there to bring more of this community building and heart. I'm calling it heart-based work because it's sort of it has to be kind of non-sectarian, really. So we're actually starting in February a new program I'm calling the Climate Odyssey Program, because the Odyssey, it's about a story, right, that we're all living, because we have to change our story from defeating the enemy and, you know, winning, because what does winning look like really in this, you know, in this scenario
it's
right now?
It's at best a temporary scenario.
Yes. So it's changing the story of, you know, here we are, a hardy band of beings on this journey home. We don't know how long it's going to take. There's many beings, you know, ogres and sirens and, you know, in our way. And we're trying to find our way through all this process. And yet we are there together on this journey. So this is a program we're starting. It's just sort of going to try out some stuff that's a combination of heart-based work, how to be with each other, mm-hmm. work that reconnects, community building, which is inherent in that, because people need to find people to talk, find their folks to talk with about how they're feeling about things, not just what can we do, but how are we doing, art, and anti-oppression, anti-racism work, because that's part of our heart work too, right? That's
Absolutely.
Part of our decolonization. So it's become a conscious, we just did our strategic plan. It's one of our new programs. It's not a campaign. It's the only one that's not a campaign, really. It's a way of supporting a movement emotionally, spiritually, creatively. And we'll see how it goes. I'm really excited about it.
I love calling it the Odyssey.
Yeah.
That's absolutely perfect.
Yeah.
So you mentioned that your work with 350, and I would be amiss not to talk about the thing this week that has caused me to slap my face a few times into a little fit of despair, perhaps, and a little fit of anguish, I think it might have been, and that is the reported nominee for the EPA this week. And you know, we were talking about reaching into that deep bag of, you got to be kidding me, what? Mm-hmm. You picked who? I think we can go ahead and just sort of populate the rest of the cabinet. If we think of our biggest nightmare for each position and go ahead and see their face in that, that's probably going to be close. So Trump has nominated Oklahoma Attorney General Scott Pruitt for the EPA. And, you know, this dude has tried to sue the EPA over and over again for clean power plan and clean rules. And it's just sort of nefarious.
Yeah.
As a climate change activist and organizer, how are you feeling this week, Barbara? I just got to ask you.
I can't use the words.
Yes, yes, okay. Right? Expletives. Yeah, okay.
One of the things is, like, I'm so grateful for the teachings that I've had, the practices I've learned, because God knows I need them now. Like, just like there's a practice of just breathing through, not breathing in, but breathing through my heart, like this news, now this news. And it's
right.
A way of kind of breathing it, taking it in, but letting it through and move out so that it's not getting lodged in my body, but it is a way to acknowledge and be with and move it through so that I don't get stuck in my heart. So yeah, now is a time, people, to just like find practices, whether it is a mindfulness practice, whether it is a gratitude practice, and I've got a whole
She's got a million of those.
Gratitude. I got a million of gratitude. Gratitude as a practice of resilience and solidarity, not just for personal happiness and stuff like that, but like staying present. So I've been suffering along with everybody else with each new piece. And because I am in a community of activists, which I highly recommend, is like finding your people, finding your community, then we can think about, A, we can come together with our hearts and say our truth about how we're doing and not be alone. And I've said this before, but the thing for me is to say, instead of going, I don't want to face this, I change it to, I don't want to face this alone. Changes the feeling completely.
That's good.
So say that to yourselves, I don't want to face this alone, which means now what do? I find my people, whoever they are, whether it's in your synagogue or your breakfast group or whatever it is, your activist group, change that scenario. And then the next thing in terms of actually strategic stuff, because that's the ongoing conversation internationally, is really understanding that localizing our efforts is going to be the most effective. And so we will be part of a global movement, certainly. But the work that we're doing here in Oregon has been awesome. I mean, we have this, we didn't get signed yesterday because of the weather, but this fossil fuel infrastructure ban in the city of Portland is going to be official. And we were able to work to push it to as good as we could get it. It's not absolutely perfect, but it's better than it was by great measures. That's going to be signed, and we will have that limitation. And it's not only for Portland, but it is an action that will be replicable across cities. I mean, we are the growing edge in many ways here in Portland, even though it's not perfect.
Not perfect.
We know it's not perfect, people. Don't call and tell us how imperfect it is.
Not perfect, but can I just say for a moment, something happened very right this week.
Yeah.
With the passage of the CEO tax in our city.
Yeah.
And that's breaking ground.
And there's some more stuff coming down the road.
Yeah.
There's some more stuff I can't even talk about yet. Coming down the road.
Ooh.
Some coalitions that are building to do some amazing work to support green energy in this town. So, you know, there's just a lot going on. So, you know, growing and mobilizing our local and our regional efforts, particularly taking advantage of the fact that we live in a particular part of the country that, you know, has some edge qualities that we can move forward to be an example. That's what we're attempting to do at the same time as we're acknowledging the truth of, you know, what else is going on or may be going on or what we imagine might be going on. I mean, I know people who are working really, really hard to get that electoral college thing switched. It's probably not going to be a whole lot better, but we don't know. So,
and we know that the system was put in place to, you know, save the landed gentry and prop that up, prop up the status quo. So, yeah, I'd say taking that down is probably a great thing. Is it my biggest passion? No, but I'm really glad somebody else has that passion.
Exactly.
And that gets back to, we each hold up our little piece of the sky and know that our comrade next to us is holding up theirs, right?
Yeah.
And it's that interweaving that makes that will make this resilient. Mm-hmm. And will actually allow us to be effective. Right. This is my belief. This is the thing I meditate on. I chant it like a mantra. We can be effective if we just really focus on that piece of the whole that we feel most called to do. It's where we'll have the most energy. It's where we'll have the most heart connection.
Right. And that's where being in community, I know, you know, KBOO has so much going on in terms of, you know, all the different people who are involved in so many different parts of the justice work that is going on, and including culture pieces. So it's huge to be. And I was, for many years, I was involved in the Unitarian Church downtown, which has a huge social justice component. So I'd be at the table for the environmental, you know, group that was there. And I knew that I could do climate change because Tess was over doing their peace work, and so was doing LGBT stuff, and other people were doing work with homeless folks. And it's like, okay, I can breathe. I don't have to know everything about the Middle East because I can do this piece because I know this person is working on this. It's like, this is the kind of consciousness that we need to find.
Exactly.
Sometimes I can't read everything that's in the paper. I can't take it all in. That has to be okay. That has to be okay for us not have to take it all in. Cause,
that's all right. It's white women's guilt.
Mm-hmm. Let's go
We're
ahead.
Supposed to do everything for everybody all the time.
Let's go ahead.
It can't
happen.
And
bring Harvey into the conversation. Harvey, you've been waiting so patiently. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hi there. Well, I have a short point to make about the Trump presidency and then something that makes me really happy. And
fantastic.
Okay, so the Trump presidency, sometimes the negative accelerates the positive. And as Trump tries to take everything apart, including Obamacare, this may actually accelerate our move towards single-payer health care much faster than the Democrats would bring it.
From your mouth to the goddess's ear.
And
secondly, here's something that really makes me happy. when I need some cheering up, excuse me, I go to YouTube and I put in the word street food of Japan or street food of Hong Kong, Taiwan, China, Philippines, and there are a number of wonderful people who have dedicated much of their time to walking around in these different countries and making videos of street vendors preparing their local and expensive specialties. And you get to, these are short videos usually, and they're actually little travelogues. You get to actually see the street level of all these countries, and then the you watch a chef prepare the food, and then the person eats it, and you see the delight cross their face. And I just love these videos; they make me
happy.
That's
so sweet.
And you don't gain a pound. You don't gain a pound.
You just gain a little travelogue.
They're marvelous. I always end up smiling and happy. There's nothing like watching people around food, the preparation and eating of food.
Well, what a delightful change from cat videos. Thanks, Harvey.
I recommend it.
Harvey, bye-bye. Thank you so much for your call.
My pleasure, bye-bye.
Take care.
Yeah, so I just want to just do a little shout out for some things that, you know, we might, that's a beautiful way to focus. It's like, okay, it's time for the joy.
Yeah.
It's time for the joy. For me right now, I am dedicated to this movement, but right now it's time for the joy. Yeah, there can be joy in being with your comrades.
Pace yourself.
But
You've
there
got
can also be
yourself.
Joy in like awesome, like, popcorn or something,
yes.
You know, it's like, or, and so any, and so I'm just going to do a little shout out for anything that brings us like into our bodies, you
yes.
know, to help ground us, to remember like what, it, to move, to dance, to connect with other people, to hug, to be with music, you know, anything that brings us into our body, anything that brings us into our creativity, our capacity to make things, to do things, to be with beauty, to make beauty, to all that. Awesome. That's like, that's one of my big mantras. Anything that brings us in relationship
yes.
with people, with our furry animals, with that whatever, with the trees, you know, that brings us, makes us feel like we are in relationship. Grow that part of your life. Anything, and connected to that is like understanding that gratitude is connected to all of those things.
Yeah.
That gratitude happens in any circumstance, and that we can. That's not to be grateful for the circumstance, but it is in the midst of difficult circumstances, there are things to look for, beings to turn to, moments that we can cherish, even in those difficult times.
It is about, 12 minutes to 9 in the morning. You are listening to KABU, your community radio station. This is Positively Revolting. We are speaking with Barbara Ford this morning around so many things, around the importance of keeping connected to spirit, to our own hearts, to each other, to the world around us as we engage in the work to change the world for the better, and most specifically, our new anti-fascist path carefully laid out before us. So there's all of that. You can join in this conversation at 503-231-8187. You can follow along throughout the week in the Twitterverse at Positive Revolt. You can also find our Facebook page, Positively Revolting. And if you'd like to check out an archive of this show, it'll be on kboo.fm. They're just, I don't know, probably in about an hour and a half. So that's also a way to share this information with friends and family. If they didn't hear it the first time, they can get it the second time. And Barbara, what you were just saying about staying in your body, connecting what it is that brings forth your joy and getting connected. Last week, we talked about an article by Timothy Snyder, and that article is how you can save America from tyranny. And we were going through it point by point.
Not by yourself, of course.
And we only got through half the points in last week's entire show. There were a couple points. I think we ended with practice corporeal politics, and that it speaks directly to what you're saying. Mm-hmm. And I want to mention that and the next point, because I think they go hand in hand with this topic. Practice corporeal politics. Power wants your body softening in your chair and your emotions dissipating on a screen. Get outside.
Exactly.
Put your body in unfamiliar places with unfamiliar people. Make new friends and march with them. Mm-hmm. And the next is make eye contact and small talk. This is not just polite. It's a way to stay in touch with your surroundings, break down unnecessary social barriers, and come to understand whom you should and should not trust. If we enter a culture of denunciation, you will want to know the psychological landscape of your daily life.
Right.
And I just, I want to underscore both of those. I think those are, how do we say, super-duper important.
Yeah.
And I think, A, making eye contact and small talk not only does that, not only breaks down those unnecessary social barriers, but it also provides the basis of solidarity and understanding of others.
Exactly.
That maybe, again, we don't all have to be in exactly the same pod to know each other's struggle and to understand and connect with each other. And as we talk about something as vast and as important as changing the world, especially in the face of this new presidency, this new regime, this new cabinet, then we're going to need all of us.
Right.
Well, and if the fascists have got to separate people and make them scared of each other for it to work.
Exactly.
Exactly. I mean, one of the things when you were talking about that, just saying that, Ani, was the energy of colonization wants us separate.
Yes.
From each other. That's part of their strategy.
Right.
So separate not only from each other, but from our bodies, from our hearts, from they want us, you know, mm-hmm. controllable. And so anything that we do that brings us, that changes that separation into connection, even in a moment, and we, you know, we don't know what that, we know what that does in the moment, maybe for us, but we don't know what that does on an ongoing basis for folks. And people need, more and more people are feeling separate, and it's part of our culture. And, you know, maybe the whole Facebook thing is a symptom of that, the whole Facebook critical nature, because people say things to each other on Facebook that they would never say to each other in person.
Right.
Right. So that's like a mantra for me also, is like, don't comply. Don't comply with this culture of separation.
Yeah.
Don't comply. Don't agree to it. Stay present to what's connecting us. That is a spiritual path in and of itself. And you don't have to be doing major political work in order to do that. You just do that in your life, and how you communicate with the person who's giving you your change in the grocery store, and in how you are with people on your walk, your daily walk, or whatever it is. Don't comply with that story of separation.
Yeah. I'm wondering, we talk a lot about grounding, and we talk a lot about grounding practice and how that helps us stay present and mm-hmm. how that helps us detox. Mm-hmm. Because, again, we're taking in this energy. We need to take in the energy, but we also need to get rid of it and let it go through
us. Give it back to the ground. Yeah. It will dissipate.
So I just want to throw out there, you know, if you don't have a regular sort of grounding practice or meditative practice, you don't know what we're talking about, you've never done that, and you're not somebody that can get it from a YouTube video or a book, leave us a Facebook message. Go mm-hmm. ahead and Positively Revolting there on Facebook. Message us, and I can try to share some resources.
Awesome.
Or start out taking a walk and breathing.
Yeah, that's a good way to start.
How you place your attention. Like just sitting in the morning with your cat on your lap, just being fully present to hot tea, steam, warm cat, sun coming through the window. You would be amazed if you're actually just really in that moment, how your heart might be stirred just in a moment of gratitude that can support you for the whole rest of your day. If you can remember it, if you actually were there for it.
So. Right? Oh my God, that's my favorite quote of the show. You can remember it if you were there for it. That's awesome. But I also, I did have this little vision of Positively Revolting listeners meeting in a park and grounding together mm-hmm. at some point coming up soon. And, you know, if you want to do that, I'd be into it. I'm just saying. We have Joe on the line and we have Francis on the line and we've got like 3 minutes left. So let's go, people. Hello. Good morning, Joe.
Hi. Thanks very much. I always look forward to your show on a Friday after taking in all of the other talk shows that kind of wind me up during the first part of the week. So thanks very much.
Sure.
Just a couple of things that I wanted to throw out that are where I'm drawing some of my hope from right now. And one of those is that with Trump, we have entered an era of transparency. So that all of the stuff that's been happening a lot of the times behind the veil is now very much in our faces, and we can't, we have to see it. And yeah. Everybody in the country is in that boat. So I think that that's going to bring about a lot of soul searching and some other possibilities.
Yeah,
where we're just not going to be able to be as easily in denial about so much.
Yeah, that's some good silver lining, Joe.
I'm calling it the great uncovering.
And related to that, since I know I have about 2 seconds here, is a little pet peeve of mine. I come from an environmental management background years ago, and I was always one of these people that was dead set against the NIMBY syndrome, because what we really need to do is put all of the things that are happening in everybody's backyard so that we're dealing with the consequences, and therein lies our incentive to actually see things differently and choose things differently and take responsibility for it. So that's
wonderful. Thank you very much.
These days.
That's great, Joe.
Yeah, thank
you very much. Take care. And we're going to jump right into Francis. Good morning, Francis. You're on the air.
Hi, I agree with Joe. It's right out there in the middle of the street now, so let's deal with it.
Yeah, right.
And I also, one thing that I have to remind myself to do, and I always remind my kids, is to try to stay in the moment and enjoy where you are right now. Also, have you heard of this Love Brigade that Van Jones has started? He's a CNN news personality. He's
Yeah, I love Van Jones, but no, I have not heard this.
He started this. It's called the Love Brigade, and it's all about bringing people together, you know, including people that you don't normally. Just right. Kind of to show that everyone has much more in common than they do differences.
Nice.
And I think that's what we need to do right now.
Wonderful. I'm glad that we got you on the air here at the last minute.
All right. You guys take care.
You too, Francis. Take good care.
Bye-bye.
And this is the last minute, so let's go ahead and call it a wrap. Any last words, Barbara?
Just trust the collective wisdom. I think that, you know, these last two callers and other people, we all have wisdom to share. So listen for the wisdom that's happening all around us as well.
Next week, we'll be talking with Starhawk and continuing this conversation. The week after that, well, we'll call that the week that's closest to solstice, and we'll be doing some Astro Tarot. It will just be going on, continuing to be positively revolting as ever. Stay connected.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 3rd Annual International Human Rights Day, December 10th at 6 p.m. at the SEIU building in Portland. International Human Rights Day is a day of solidarity and remembrance of people all over the world who continue to be oppressed by human rights violations. Those who are systematically marginalized, disappeared, imprisoned, and killed. This event features a report back from solidarity trips taken to the Philippines in the summer of 2016, cultural presentations, and more. Again, that's the 3rd Annual International Human Rights Day celebration, December 10th at 6 p.m. at the SEIU Building, 6401 Southeast Foster Road in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.